After a hard-fought win against Illinois on Friday night, Purdue is back on the road this week. Tuesday night, late in Lincoln, Nebraska, to take on the Cornhuskers. We will break all of that down on Gold and Black Radio. Kyle Charters here, Brian Newbert as well. Brian, in a moment, but first this.
Designing and building since 1968, T&W has changed the way people think about construction. T&W's three-stage approach to designing and building is unmatched throughout the construction industry. Learn more about T&W's people, passion, and projects at twdesignbuild.com.
Experience unparalleled comfort, service, and cuisine at the Whitaker Inn. This Midwestern oasis is perfect for a relaxing staycation or weekend getaway.
Escape from the ordinary at the Whitaker Inn.
On the far end of Main Street in downtown Lafayette, you'll find East End Grill. Industrial and classic, the restaurant is built like a steakhouse, but handles like a bistro. East End Grill's menu includes creative starters, simple chopped salads, burgers, fresh fish, and steaks, and the signature shrimp and grits. The staff prepares every item from scratch and emphasizes simple meals that incorporate fresh, local, and seasonal ingredients. A warm and inviting dining room features a cozy bar that includes a great selection of craft beer, inspired cocktails, and a robust and expanding wine list. Whatever your entertainment needs are, a cocktail at the bar, dinner with family, or a special event in the private dining room, the energized and attentive staff is here for you. East End Grill in downtown Lafayette, welcome to our table. When it comes to land sales, it pays to have experts in your corner. AcrePro Midwest Farm Group is your local farmland specialist. With decades of experience in Indiana agriculture, no one knows the market better. Whether you're doing a 1031 exchange or simply buying and selling farmland, your local AcrePro agent will walk the land with you and ensure the deal is done right. Visit AcrePro.com or call 765-775-6502 and talk to your local land expert today. Again, 765-775-6502. Boilermakers headed to Nebraska to take on the Cornhuskers at a game late on Tuesday night following Purdue's win on Friday against Illinois. Brian, Purdue did a lot of things well against Illinois on Friday. Among those was its ability to play basketball for long stretches without Zach Edey, who had the rare occasion to be in foul trouble. I mean, I think that had to be the big takeaway from that game, that Purdue has to have some confidence now going forward, including into the game on Tuesday night in Lincoln.
Yeah, you know, I think much has been made of Purdue's depth this season. But I think, you know, part of that depth is the fact that you have guys who can come in off the bench and actually, you know, really impact games as like featured guys. And obviously Trey Kaufman-Wren was needed in a way. He's not been needed all that often as a go-to guy sort of player offensively against Illinois, and obviously delivered. And but also he and Mason Gillis both made just profound impacts on the glass. And I think it was kind of a combination of a really, you know, good offensive game by Purdue, a really sharp offensive game by Purdue from guys who, you know, aren't ordinarily their leading scorers, but also a classic sort of effort game by Purdue, because Trey Kaufman-Wren and Mason Gillis on the offensive glass were just game changers. And I say that, and I failed to mention the guy who got 15 rebounds in 22 minutes, obviously Zach Edey. So yeah. The rebounding part of it was just, you know, a supreme effort. And I think that that's not always the easiest balance to strike, because sometimes these really precise offensive teams, as Purdue has become, are not always the grinders. But I think, you know, that was a combination thereof against Illinois the other night.
Yeah, Zach Edey had a, we'll put this in italics with asterisks around it too. He had a bad game, 10 and 15, which like 300 teams in the country would take every night, right? I mean,
yeah, obviously.
10 and 15, yeah.
And he missed three free throws,
yeah,
which is completely unlike him.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's, you didn't get your normal Zach Edey productivity, and you won anyway. And you won pretty convincing. I know people are going to look at the final score and say you won by five, but it was a 21-point game in the second half. There were some bizarre things that happened in the final minute in terms of a very strange flagrant foul coupled with, you know, Purdue missing a couple one-on-ones at the worst moment. Obviously, that's part of the game, so I can't call that a fluke. But Illinois got handed 2 points off of that flagrant foul, and it made the game look much closer than it actually was. I don't think there was ever really a moment where you were like, oh, this is, you know, this isn't going to end well for Purdue, even though the score started to narrow.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I was never really felt like it was in doubt, even though it, you know, got a little strange there with that flagrant foul in the last minute. You know, Trey Kaufman, I mean, he really stepped into that even before Edie got into foul trouble. He'd gotten off to a good start in that game. I mean, that duo, him and Zach Edie, I think you sort of wrote this, maybe you wrote this after this game or talked about it somewhere. I mean, just sort of, you know, playing the Trevion Williams role there a little bit and, you know, giving you a two-headed monster in the middle that you can throw the ball into and them be productive as Purdue was a few years ago when it had Edie and Williams together.
Yeah. And I think they're more different than Zach Edie and Trevion Williams were. But the productivity, at least on Friday night, didn't drop off at all. And I've been writing about Trey Kaufman around ever since Portland last year that if you just put him into Zach Edey's usage, if you just put him into Zach Edey's minutes, this is what you're getting every game. Maybe not 23 or 26, whatever he had, but you're getting 18 and 9, something like that. You're getting an all Big Ten player. And I think that's what you'll see at Purdue next year. But on this particular night, when obviously Zach Edey was dealing with some rarely seen foul trouble, and I do think his first two fouls were probably merited. His fourth foul was obviously merited. The third one was the one that was a little bit dicey, if I recall correctly.
You know, the other thing that I thought that was a positive takeaway for Purdue is that it didn't necessarily get great shooting games from its two main guards, Braden Smith and Fletcher Loyer. There's been a bit of a narrative nationally that Purdue wins when its two guards and Zach Edey play well. I mean, certainly you want that trio to play well, but Purdue does have some other options there. I mean, we saw Trey Kaufman Wren, and then you get three pointers, I think, that were huge in the moment. Camden Heidi hits one. Ethan Morton hits one. The Ethan Morton one, I believe, came right after the Coleman Hawkins three-pointer was wiped off due to the shot clock violation. I mean, those are huge swings. Purdue proves again that it can win with some other guys.
Yeah, it's a pretty bold national narrative, as you mentioned before, to say that when a team's three best players play well, a team's tough to beat. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how many opportunities Fletcher Loyer really got. He made the 1-3 off the offensive rebound, but his usage is going to come and go. I think that's been pretty clear this season where they're going to run stuff for him against certain people, against certain matchups at certain times, and sometimes he's not going to get very many shots. I think that was the case against Illinois. He did break down the defense off the dribble a couple times. Got Purdue a couple offensive rebounds off his misses, you know, things like that. But some nights are just not going to be his night. And you can't always judge him by his scoring total, because as good a offensive basketball team as Purdue is, the way to be really good on offense, as I keep saying over and over again, the way to be a really good offensive basketball team is to have a bunch of really good offensive basketball players on the floor. And there's more to that than just shooting. And there are going to be nights where he goes and gets 27 for you, like he did against Arizona, like he did against Tennessee. But there's going to be a lot of nights too where he gets 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 points, and it doesn't look like he was really good, but he made Purdue better offensively, because he was out there. And you know, obviously there are some defensive things to overcome that sometimes Painter's going to have to manage. Maybe that was a little bit of the case against Illinois, Braden Smith was just kind of opportunistic against Illinois. Didn't make his long twos the way he normally does. I think he made 2 threes, didn't he? I don't have the stats in front of me.
Yeah.
But I thought he and Trey Kaufman Wren were really good in pick and roll, which was surprising because it's not like they do that very often. Illinois clearly was making a priority to stay with Braden Smith off of those ball screens. Coleman Hawkins, when he would contain Smith coming off the screen, he would just stay with him. It was the kind of thing that sometimes people did against Purdue when Carson Edwards was on the team, and to a certain extent, Ryan Klein. Perhaps the scoring opportunities weren't there quite as much for him, but at the same time, that's part of the reason Trey Kaufman-Wren goes off, because he had a couple of buckets in that pick and roll action that, you know, you hadn't really seen all that much from him in terms of the short roll runners. So even when these guys aren't scoring, I think they're opening things up for other people. I think that is easy to overlook sometimes when you're as good as Purdue is, and some of these players are as good as they are, and people want to see numbers.
You know that of all the sets that Purdue runs offensively, the one that I currently love the most involves the high screen and roll with Zach Edey with Mason Gillis getting leaked in behind the screener for the three-pointers. I love that play. And Purdue's so good in that play, and Mason Gillis is so good in that role. I mean, he's a heck of a valuable player because he can hit some big shots, and he just does all that dirty work for you. And I mean, all that came to the forefront in the game on Friday night.
Well, that action you're talking about too is absolutely critical too to Mason Gillis being a great post-entry guy. He's gotten assists or hockey assists or whatever it might be off of that. But also he can make that shot, and he's just kind of perfect for that role. That's a huge part of where his offensive value lies, but also on the offensive glass, and played a really good defensive game against Illinois too. That Ethan Moore or that Camden Heidi three in transition.
Yeah.
He made that play because he stood Quincy Guerriere up, made him miss, got the rebound, got the ball outletted very quickly to Braden Smith. Mm-hmm. Camden Heidi ran the floor, and all of a sudden Camden Heidi's making a wing three in transition. It was Mason Gillis's positional defense there that started that whole play.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was a good play and a big play in a big moment. So Purdue on the road at Nebraska on Tuesday night. You know, Nebraska's a more dangerous team than what it has been. This is a late game on a Tuesday night when the weather outside is probably going to be not all that great. I mean, these are the dangerous ones, I think, in Big Ten play, in a Big Ten that seems to be wide open after Purdue. I don't know. I think everyone's the same. What do you think about the game on Tuesday night?
Well, I think Purdue's pretty immune to some of those, you know, phone it in / letdown factors that we often talk about for games like this. I think they're more mature than a lot of teams who would go into a game like this and not be ready. I think they're pretty insulated from a basketball perspective outside of the turnovers. I think that's their one vulnerability, obviously. You know, Purdue could have played better from head against Illinois. I think that's probably maybe something where they're still growing into. I don't know if Purdue's still at a place where they should be growing into anything. They've got so much experience now and so much situational experience, but I think Purdue's, I don't think people should be too worried about Purdue in terms of these sleepy Tuesday night games in the winter. These non-high profile games, I think Purdue knows damn well that Nebraska is especially dangerous at home.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if any of these guys have really experienced it, but Purdue's lost at Nebraska before. Purdue's really laid an egg at Nebraska before a couple of times. And I'm sure this team is being reminded of some of those things. I just wouldn't anticipate, you know, Purdue just not showing up or just kind of phoning it in. You know, the one game they lost this year at Northwestern, starting the game wasn't the problem. And when you phone a game in, you don't start well. That's right. I think that's fair to say. That wasn't the issue at Northwestern. It was playing from ahead that was the issue at Northwestern. The turnovers, things like that. But Purdue was up like 15 in the first half, weren't they? Something like that.
Yeah.
Purdue started that game fine. Purdue started every game fine, with the exception of maybe Alabama. But that was a bit of an outlier because Alabama was on a virtually unprecedented heater from 3-point range.
Yeah. Who do you think is the biggest challenger? We're four games into the Big Ten for most teams, three or four games in. Is it still, I mean, my opinion was it was Illinois. I think it probably still is Illinois. Do you have somebody out there that you think's the biggest challenger to Purdue this year?
I don't think there's anything close to a close second, but I would maybe pick Wisconsin.
Yeah.
At this point, I think Illinois is going to be better than it was reasonable to assume they'd be without Terrence Shannon, and I'm assuming Terrence Shannon isn't coming back. But I think they're still like at least an upper half Big Ten team. They're still an NCAA tournament team. In terms of who's best positioned to finish two games or three games behind Purdue in the race, I know I'm getting ahead of myself there, but I'm just talking about that in terms of how much better Purdue is on the field. I'd say maybe Wisconsin. You know, I think Michigan State's exactly what I thought Michigan State might be, to be honest with you, not to pat myself on the back, but you return all the same 22-year-old players from a team that was a little bit above average last year, and you expected them to be a top five team this year just because they beat Marquette in the NCAA tournament. That didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I think you're seeing, too, a lot of these teams – like, why isn't Maryland better? Why isn't Michigan State better? They've got all these same dudes back, right? Why are they worse? I think there's something going on at those places. But I think the root of the issue at Michigan State is just that all the guys they brought back were average to slightly above average Big Ten players last year, and now they're the same guys.
Yeah.
And I've talked about this before. I know this isn't a Michigan State focused podcast, but it's been years since he's had a typical Tom Izzo team. I mean, you know, I will defer to Rafael Davis on this because he actually used the word on TV last night. But they're soft. They're not Michigan State tough. They haven't been in years.
Yeah.
You know, it's just. They're just not what they once were. And you sort of wonder if it's ever come back because Izzo either stopped getting his guys, stopped being able to get his guys, or those guys don't exist anymore. One way or the other, they're just not the same. There's no Draymond Green. There's no Kenny Goins, right?
Yeah.
This is what we're talking about. There's no Cassius Winston there. There's no, you know, really, really tough, tough-minded veterans on that team. Tyson Walker's a good player. All those other guys are, you know, some of them are flat out coach killers. And some of them are just flat soft. And that's why Michigan State's where Michigan State is right now. And to be honest with you, if Tom Izzo heard everything I just said, I don't think he'd disagree with me.
No, judging from watching his presser after the loss on Sunday night to Northwestern, I don't think he would disagree with you at all, because he used some of those words, at least some of them, implied at least that his team doesn't have the toughness that it needs to have. Yeah, we're not we don't cover Michigan State, we don't cover Maryland, we don't know as much about them, but is it not a danger with a 12, 13 man roster in the transfer era that sometimes things just aren't going to work out? Like, that's the danger of playing that game, right? I mean, I don't know that that's what's happening in Michigan State or Maryland per se, but when you add, I mean, it has worked out, it seems, for Illinois this year. They've added pieces, and the pieces seem to be working, that we will see, you know, longer term here, how that works without Terrence Shannon. But I think in football, the transfer era, some of that chemistry stuff doesn't matter as much. But when you're talking about a small roster, that's the danger that you play a little bit, is that you just end up with a roster that doesn't work.
Well, there's stuff going on in college basketball too, that, you know, I can't say for certain this is affecting anybody in the Big Ten, but there are situations, you know, where these teams are just getting kind of pieced together on the fly. And
yeah,
there are situations where everybody in the locker room knows how much money everybody's making.
Right.
And, you know, it's just, there are situations, obviously, where, you know, the transfer portal is something that people around players are always bringing up. Stuff like, I think Purdue's pretty immune to that, because I think Purdue, the way Purdue recruits, and I'm not trying to, you know, spread propaganda here for Purdue, but the way Purdue recruits, honestly, I think they sidestep a lot of that stuff. Now, are they ever going to be 100% immune to it? Probably not. The day will probably come where, you know, something happens. But I think the way he has built his teams before all this undercurrent stuff was going on has almost made it immune to a lot of what's going on in college basketball. And there's got to be some reason to the fact, other than the fact Purdue's got good teams, there's got to be. It is really interesting that Purdue has surged as a program when all of this stuff is going on that isn't necessarily the game Purdue is playing, right?
Yeah.
Purdue seems to have really good chemistry. They've got a deep rotation of guys who all seem bought in, you know, and I think Trey Kaufman Wren is kind of your perfect example. This is a guy who, when Zach Edey came back, stuff changed for him. As I said before, had Zach Edey stayed in the draft, you know, Trey Kaufman Wren's a first team All Big Ten player, caliber player right now. He's not worried about how much money he's making. He's not worried about, I'm sure he'd like to play more minutes. I'm sure he'd like to get more shots, but he's not going home and sulking about it. He's going home and reading books. You know, he's going home and thinking about his ethics class, because he's that type of kid. And, you know, Caleb First is the same way. He's just kind of a happy warrior, you know, stuff like that, to use. I think Gene Katie used to say that. I can't remember or not, but these guys aren't worried about stuff. It doesn't seem like to me. There's a lot of guys on this team, you know, who have earned more than they're getting. And there is no, and I don't mean that in terms of money. I mean that in terms of minutes, you know, starting jobs, things like that. And to this point, I don't see any red flags in terms of that being problematic. You have guys who've started games for Purdue before, a lot of games, helped Purdue win a lot of games over the years, and they're now coming off the bench and they're now playing smaller roles, and they're still playing their asses off, and they're still impacting winning. And I just think that's a dynamic you build over years. And that's a dynamic you don't build when a kid gets to your campus in June before he plays his first game with a brand new team as a 21-year-old. It's a dynamic you build when you're recruiting a kid as a junior in high school,
you're right,
or a sophomore in high school. And I think it's been a little bit funny that Purdue has sort of kept on doing what it's doing. And by doing so, it's gone against the grain in college basketball, and all this stuff that, you know, theoretically could have really hurt Purdue in terms of players leaving, players looking for more money and things like that. I think that's become an advantage for Purdue because they've done things a certain way, and that certain way stands out against the landscape to the point where Purdue's got advantages that come from it, not disadvantages.
Yeah. Yeah, well said. I mean, I think it's got to be incredibly challenging, but Matt Painter's built a culture right now that works. He's attracted players that fit into that and that want to be at Purdue for multiple reasons. I do agree with you, too. There will come a day, and it won't be this year. It probably won't be next year, though it could. Maybe 5 years from now, 10 years from now, whatever, where it doesn't work and something goes awry. But we'll enjoy this. From a Purdue perspective, well, it does.
You had guys after last season who could have made a lot of money.
Yeah.
Had they decided they wanted to go somewhere other than Purdue. And I'm not just talking about underclassmen. I'm talking about Zach Edey. He could have come back, withdrawn from the draft, but gone in the portal instead of coming back to Purdue. And he could be making $3 million a year somewhere right now, probably.
Right.
But these guys are invested in Purdue. And I think you're seeing that on the floor.
Right. All right, thanks, man. Enjoy the trip.
Yep, thank you.
At Purdue Federal Credit Union, it's about a relationship. A relationship that goes where you go, wherever you are in life. A relationship that's committed to free financial wellness resources, lower fees, and innovative digital banking solutions. Because we believe in people helping people. Let's build your financial future together. Purdue Federal Credit Union, your trusted financial partner for life. Federally insured by NCUA.
That'll do it for our podcast for this week. Thanks to our sponsors. As always, if you do like the podcast, please rate us 5 stars on your favorite podcast app. Leave us a comment as well. All right, that'll do it for our show. For Brian Newbert, I'm Kyle Charters. Thanks for listening. This is Gold and Black Radio.